Your argument, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Very well.
Good morning, all. I've tried to synthesize things for the purpose of the argument in light of the basic fundamental nature of the issue before the court. And probably I should have done this before, and I developed a checklist of the two blocks that would supposedly contribute to and constitute probable cause. Block one is the information supplied by the informant. Block two is the what I will call the dog category. And block one, I have drawn up in the left column the information provided, and had two checklists, corroborated and uncorroborated. And it is amazing when that analysis is put into that format how skinny the contribution of block one is in terms of the accumulation of probable cause. The informant indicated that Joe Akuri is a white male, and that was corroborated. The informant indicated that Joe Akuri sells weed in New York and Delaware. That was not corroborated, and we can assume that the police officer, since he ran a motor vehicle check, ran an NCIC check, and there is a hole there because we can also assume reasonably, as a fair-minded magistrate is supposed to assume, using reasonable inferences, that had there been any indication of criminality at all, there would have been some mention of it.
Well, is that the rule, that you make reasonable inferences from what is not in the warrant or from what is in the affidavit?
Actually, I just came across two cases that say, and I would say no, you're supposed to see what's there and not speculate as to why other things aren't there. I take a totality of circumstances to include inferences that can reasonably be drawn, although they're not set out. And I think it is fundamental that a police officer checking a motor vehicle, doing a motor vehicle run in the context of drug dealing, is going to check to see if there's any criminal history. And I think that the court does not have to, and I've just reversed what I just said, I'm taking the position that under a totality of circumstances analysis, you are not guided and restricted by the blinders that the state puts forth, and that you can draw reasonable inferences about what's not there if there is a basis for doing so. So we don't even have to get to that, but I contend, because it's not corroborated, but I contend that it is certainly fair inference to say, had there been any indication in the criminal record that there was some support, it would have been included in that affidavit. The next information that was given by the informant was that Akuri was in room 256, not corroborated. The next information is that there was another unknown white male in room 256, not corroborated. The final bit of information that he offered was that the defendant's motor vehicle was at the hotel in the parking lot, and it's not clear if he described the tag number, and I guess the state gets the benefit since it's my burden, so I will say that was corroborated. So in the final sum and analysis, what the police officer had when he called in Kai, or Kay, don't want to mispronounce the dog's name, if it's a male or female, I'm not sure, is a white male named Joe Akuri has a vehicle parked in a parking lot of a motel. Period. That's it. Under Gardner and J.L., that certainly wouldn't get you reasonable suspicion to do anything. So it is absolutely critical for the state to be able to convince the magistrate that the information provided by the dog category is sufficient to take this from pure speculation, like, yeah, right, show me something, to something that one can fasten themselves onto mentally and say, yeah, there is a fair probability that there's drugs in that room and that car. What do we know about the dog? We know it was a dog. We know it was a, quote, drug detection, close quote, dog, whatever that may mean. And we know that that dog belonged to a Wilmington police officer. What don't we know that can be considered by the court? Well, what we don't know is that Officer Vitale is in the drug advice unit of the Wilmington police. He's described as a Wilmington police officer. Yeah. What that tells us is we don't know if he has any specialization or specialized training or specialized experience in dealing in drug investigations at all. It's not in the vice unit. Mr. Dog or Ms. Dog, whatever the case may be, we also don't know is in the vice unit.
Well,
I guess there's a lot about the world that we don't know. But the affiant gets evidence from his confidential informant. He checks out certain things they confirm, which is that he does find out that this guy, Okori, is from New York. He has a driver's license that he immediately uses Facebook or something like that. He's at staying by the Concord Mall. There's a car that matches it. He then makes a call to a Wilmington police officer. You would have us essentially infer that the magistrate drew the inference he called it. He could call any Wilmington cop who had a dog. He brought his dog from home out to Newcastle County and alit on the vehicle, the specific vehicle identified by the confidential informant, and the room identified by the confidential informant. When the inference might be, and the affidavit could have been more clear in this, is, yeah, he called a very specific cop in a different jurisdictional police force because that police officer had an asset that he needed, which was a drug detection dog. He called the person within the unit who had the dog trained for the task. The dog was then walked by the specific things identified by the confidential informant, and the dog alerted on each. Don't we have to give, if we have to give the benefit of common sense inferences, isn't that the common sense inference that the judge drew who granted the warrant?
I'm not suggesting that he brought his personal dog from home. I am suggesting that he brought a dog that is with the Wilmington Police Department, but we have no idea about that dog's qualifications, training, or abilities.
But that's a different thing, which is...
I agree.
If what you're saying is, can't we draw the inference that the police officer who called a police officer from another jurisdiction called a specific type of police officer who had a specific kind of asset that was relevant to what was going on, which is a canine trained to do drug detection. Because that narrows the inquiry into whether they have to produce the certificate in each case and the training of the dog, rather than that this is, my dog Chelsea is not trained to do anything. She would alight on chicken livers, but you could drive her by all kinds of things and she's not going to alert, you know, at anything. But if you threw a tennis ball, she'll get real excited. So, you know, I think I'm trying to get at whether this is about the certificate or is it about the idea that this is any possible dog with any possible Wilmington cop.
No, it's about the idea that this court has to say to people, when you're going to put together search warrants, let's be professional about it. It was only the first step and certainly not the conclusive step. And I'm not hanging my hat on. And just because they didn't say vice, everything they lose. Not at all. That's just to show how just cavalier they were in this. Oh, yeah, somebody in the Wilmington Police Department. You can infer that it is an asset that is assigned to the vice unit. That's not my major argument. That's just a...
Mr. Hurley, yeah. Let's pin this down a little bit more finely. My notes of the last oral argument indicate that I ask you whether it was the law police officer that's submitting the affidavit has got to attach the dog's CV to the affidavit. And your response, if I got it down correctly, was no, that's not the law, but it ought to be. Is that a...
No, it's stupid. If I said it, not you're stupid. Wait, let me back up. I'm not saying what you said is stupid. If I said that was stupid. No, it is not the law. And having read the cases, it's a totality of circumstances argument, and that would be nice, but it's not necessary. And if they didn't, well, I'm going to get to that. But I withdraw to the point I said that should be the law, not necessarily should be the law. Not necessarily.
Are you going to address the Rivera Third Circuit case? And is that controlling or persuasive in any way? I know it's not controlling, but is it persuasive?
I'm not going to address it because I don't know which one that was, Your Honor.
That's where the Third Circuit refused to adopt a rule that a positive canine reaction can only contribute to the probable cause determination if the warrant contains specific facts about the dog's reliability.
Okay. I don't really, and I don't want to disagree with people a lot smarter than I am, but there's a case that I read that I didn't submit, and I actually was looking at the rule to see if I could submit it today, which gave a Flores in New Mexico federal court, which gave a very, very thorough discussion. And what it said is, it's not a sine qua non that you have to have certification and training. You use a totality of circumstances analysis as you would with a confidential informant's reliability with regard to the dog. And in the particular dynamics of a particular factual situation, there may be information regarding that dog, even though you don't know his track history, even though you don't have a certificate that would allow a reasonable person to say, you know what, he's probably reliable. So I don't think the sine qua non is there has to be a certification. Whatever the nature of the evidence is, there has to be something there that reasonably imparts a finding of, he's probably reliable, I can rely upon it, much as a PBT. This court has said you can't put a PBT in unless it's calibrated. This court has said you can't put Miller versus State. This court has said you can't use HGN and Zimmerman unless there's training.
Well, it seems perhaps too simple here, but if you describe a police dog as a, quote, drug detection dog, aren't you saying that this is a dog that has been trained by the police or through whatever services they use to train their dogs and has been certified inferentially because it is a drug detection dog? It has satisfied whatever criteria the police may have for calling a dog a drug detection dog. Why isn't that enough?
Well, because you wouldn't say medical personnel and assume it's a doctor. He was attended by medical personnel.
Wait a second. You're telling me there are different levels of drug detection dogs?
I don't know, and I don't know the court does either. I don't know if there are. That's the point. We don't know.
No, I'm not so sure that is the point, because if a dog can detect drugs, a dog can detect drugs. And that's why it's called the drug detection dog. And unless there's some reason to believe that some dogs are grade A drug detection dogs and others are training drug detection dogs, then the name itself tells you that this is a dog that detects drugs. Why do you need to know more than that
in order to have probable cause?
The case law reflects that just as in other pursuits of human endeavor, there are flunkouts. Not all dogs make it. Not all dogs do well. Some of them have a 56% reliability rate. So just because somebody's a drug detection dog doesn't mean that he was a successful drug detection dog.
So you
doesn't
do
mean
need
he was certified.
Pardon? So you do need some.
No,
nope,
you don't
CV.
Need a CV. I'm just saying you can't just say drug detection is the magic bullet. That's all you guys got to say is drug detection. Okay, fine. We know he's qualified. Just like you can't say medical personnel and you say, fine, you can do the surgery, doctor. You're medical personnel, fine. You're medically trained, fine. Get into my head. It doesn't follow. It's too vague, too open to interpretation for a reasonable person to say, you know, I feel confident that this dog knows what it's doing, and when he has a positive reaction, fine. Furthermore, what also is not present is the training of the handler. The research indicates that the margin of error with regard to handlers is important, and that can be a source of error. You have no idea if Vitaly, again, I guess we're going to give the benefit of the doubt to the state in this and say, well, obviously you wouldn't call a patrol guy on a motorcycle to come bring his dog from home. So we can assume for the purpose of that inference that I can't discount that he was in the drug unit, but that doesn't mean that he's been to the training that one has to have in order to handle the dog. So you're not giving them cues, which is part of what the literature says if one reads about it, or some kind of signs to the dog that they give false positives, which they are renowned for giving in the drug sniffing business of dogs.
You also don't need to prove your case like you would at trial for a search warrant.
Exactly. Probability. So, reasonable probability. Fair probability.
Right. So tell me how it's not reasonable for an objective magistrate to say, okay, there were certain facts that were provided by a confidential informant, and certain of those facts apparently were corroborated by a drug detection dog. It may turn out that that was wrong. It may turn out that that dog was not one of the better drug detection dogs. But on its face, why doesn't that create a reasonable probability that the drugs are there?
Just the same as a portable breath test being administered that's not calibrated, that this court has said, No. Must be calibrated. It's the same rationale. I can say, you gave him a PBT. Yeah. can't get it until you say calibrated PBT. It's a drug detection dog.
You're talking about at trial, right?
I'm talking about your case, Miller versus State. This court said for a portable breath test to go into a probable cause analysis, you have to have calibrated PBT. So you have to have a calibration mechanism, metaphorically. You just can't say a portable breath test. Can't get it in. This court said that. So how can you just say, well, when it's an instrument that has some scientific validity that everybody understands, and if there's been testing done on it, statistical testing, it has to be calibrated. You bring in some dog.
Well, why isn't the so-called calibration requirement that you're arguing for satisfied by the drug detection canine description?
I'm sorry, I don't understand that.
Well, the affidavit refers to drug detection canine.
Yes, it does.
Why doesn't that alone satisfy the calibration requirement, as opposed to any dog off the street? And it's very reasonable, your argument, that you just can't bring in any dog who alerts to a car or a building or anything else, and there's going to be a search warrant. But why doesn't drug detection canine satisfy probable cause?
Okay. Kia could have gone over to the institute in Jersey. It's a 72-hour course, failed out after 5 hours. We don't know that. We don't know that it wouldn't be that's their best vice dog. You say, okay, you're not good enough for certification, but you're all we got. You don't know. And a PBT, you can't just say PBT. This is the same thing. You just can't give a name to something without there being something that a reasonable person can say, because it has this name, that tells me it's probably reliable. Okay. Just calling something a drug detection dog in the abstract doesn't mean, ergo, reliability.
So I gather your position is that in the eyes of the law, a dog should be treated like a machine.
It's soft science, absolutely. In the eyes of the law with regard to this and in explosives and in cadavers.
That's the purpose of your analogizing it to the...
reliability is the key.
Isn't there a major difference, though? That is, you can have a breathalyzer machine or what, a machine that detects alcohol content in the blood has to be precisely calibrated because the statute requires that the alcohol blood content be at a certain precise level or else there is no crime. A dog, however, can sniff out drugs, maybe very well, maybe not so very well, maybe there may be a range in which the dog can successfully sniff out the drugs, although it may not be a grade A plus, maybe a B or even a B minus. And that's not precise calibration.
Right.
So there is, would you not agree, some inherent difference between a drug sniffing or a drug detecting dog
to the degree,
and an alcohol detecting breathalyzer?
The difference is that with regard to drug sniffing, there doesn't have to be quantification. But with regard to reliability, it's every much the same. If it was if you knew, for example, just give an example, he said there, Kia is a drug detection dog who failed the institute and whose success rate was 11%. You wouldn't say, well, okay, probably there's marijuana there. So it does matter the qualifications of that dog.
But is everyone supposed to infer bad faith on the part of the applicant, the affiant?
No.
Because what you're asking us to assume is that KAI, which I believe it's K-A-I, that is unreliable. I take it from the fact that we're here that didn't turn out to be actually true in the instance. The affiant says that KAI was walked past the thing and walked through the hotel. It doesn't say KAI was constantly alerting at every room. It says KAI alerted at two specific places, consistent with where the confidential informant suggested there would be marijuana. And you're asking us to assume, and I'm assuming that, frankly, if you knew for a fact or could have found out that KAI, in fact, never had any training, was just picked up at the SPCA, and that the person who was walking her was actually just out of the academy and had been on I-95 doing speeding patrol, that would be in their record. I mean, I don't know how you can step away from the CV argument, because that seems what you're down to, which is there has to be a presentation of the actual credentialing, as I understand it, the two components that you say add up to a reliable use of a drug dog, which is a trained and certified handler and then the successful completion of the dog of a specific training program, right?
You've said several things. Number one, you should not assume because I didn't bring in a hole in their case, that means there wasn't a hole. It's their burden to move the ball. Number two, I am not asking you to assume that the dog was unreliable. I am asking you to assume that the burden of showing reliability is on the state, not on me to show unreliability. Therefore, if they haven't done that, then the warrant fails. So
but the way that they have to show it, that you're arguing to us, is not by saying that this is a drug detection dog.
It's got to be more than that.
It's got to be, as I understand it, that the handler of the dog has also been a certified handler, and that the dog has passed some reputable training.
No. I'll give you an example. Suppose they brought in the dog, and the dog's handler is not trained at all. And this dog wasn't even trained. And the handler said, you know what? This dog's got the most interesting quirk about him. I've had him around marijuana 11 times in his life. The guy's never been trained. He's a natural. And doggone if he didn't, his ears perk up and his tail perk up and he starts barking. 11 for 11. If a court accepted that and said, hey, that's pretty doggone good. Doggone. That wasn't a pun. If a court did that, there, in the totality of circumstances analysis, they could say, even though he wasn't trained, even though he's not an NFL-trained quarterback, he's just got a natural raw ability that convinces me that he's reliable, you can consider that. Now, the best indicia, obviously, is certification. Absolutely the best. But not necessarily. There can be other theoretical circumstances where as long as reliability is established. But simply saying drug detection doesn't cut it. It's too vague a term. Too many eyes is in the beauty is in the eyes of the beholder.
Well, isn't this more like identifying a candidate for the Delaware Bar as a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania Law School rather than, and wouldn't that be good enough for that purpose rather than having to say a graduate of University of Pennsylvania Law School with an A-plus average or a B or a C?
The difference is between attendee at the University of Pennsylvania Law School versus a graduate. That's the difference. He's an attendee. That doesn't mean he's successful. That doesn't mean he qualifies.
Well, I think that's where I think Justice Ginsburg has interjected, and as Justice Berger's question was, I assume, maybe I'm wrong, that the magistrate could assume from a drug detection dog that that was a dog that the Wilmington Police Force put in to service because it could do the job of a drug detection dog. And that it didn't put, you know, and the inference that the magistrate's entitled to draw is that it frankly was qualified to do the job. Not that it was somebody, like, then they would assume that the police officer passed the police academy, right?
They assume that a police officer passed the police academy. The police officers put their expertise in the affidavit because you have to do that. That's exactly the same thing. Police officer tells
you. But the handler didn't, right?
No, the handler didn't.
No, because so that would be assumed here, same thing, which is would the, you know, that's where we're trying to get it, because you, and I'll stop it. I'm trying to figure out the difference between the CV rule. What is it that they have to say? Do they have to either give you the certificate or state that they passed a specific test?
No, they have to give a factual presentation which allows a reasonable man to infer reliability, and there is no magic pill. The certificate certainly does it without any sweat. And every case all over the United States that I found except one says there has to be something in the record, and just saying drug detection is not it.
How about you? We're really talking about shorthand references here. What about a shorthand reference, totally different context, to U.S. Navy SEAL? Would that not be sufficient to convey what kind of soldier we're talking about?
Depends on the context. I don't know. It depends on the, it's very contextual. Just saying drug detection. When you get constitutional rights involved, it's got to be done right. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Mr. Hurley, you have about a minute and a half. Do you want to reserve that?
No, I'm done unless there's any more questions.
Well, you still have an opportunity to speak for another minute if you choose.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Maria Knoll representing the State of Delaware. Your Honor, in this case against Mr. Okori, the magistrate had a substantial basis for concluding that the warrant was sufficient. In relying on Illinois versus Gates, where the U.S. Supreme Court adopted a totality of the circumstances approach in reviewing search warrants, it is clear, Your Honors, that there is enough information in the search warrant from both taking together the confidential informant and the independent cooperation of the drug detection dog to satisfy.
Ms. Noel, let's change the facts for a minute.
Okay.
Assume the facts are as they were stated in the affidavit, except that there was no independent corroboration of anything that the confidential informant told the police officer, other than what the dog detected. So take out the element of independent corroboration, leave everything else as it was. Would that be sufficient to establish probable cause?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Let me see if I understand. We're taking out the dog altogether?
No. The dog stays in.
The dog stays in.
The confidential informant stays in, but the police officer doesn't independently corroborate anything that the confidential informant tells him.
Your Honor, I still think that there is sufficient probable cause in this case, because if the dog sniff were to stay in, that in itself is also independent corroboration by the police. But also, because this particular informant was not only past proven, but known to the police officer, the police officer had met with this confidential informant, had met with him at a predetermined location where the informant not only ID'd Mr. Okori, but gave some specific information with respect to Mr. Okori.
Well, is your position that no independent corroboration of what a reliable, confidential informant provides is required, or that some corroboration is required, but the use of the dog in this case fulfilled that requirement?
I believe a couple of things, Your Honor. I believe that the use of the dog fulfilled that requirement in this case. In some cases, I think it's a close question in this case, but in some cases I think the specificity of a tip from a confidential informant can be enough without cooperation.
Without any corroboration.
Yes. But the state submits that in this particular case we don't have to go there, because we do have the independent cooperation of the drug dog on top of the specificity of the tip from the confidential informant.
Is there a mutual corroboration here between the informant and the drug dog? The informant says there's marijuana in the hotel room that's been transported in the car, mm-hmm. and then a drug detection canine, who the affidavit does not describe as past proven reliable, alerts. Mm-hmm. So does the informant corroborate the dog, and vice versa?
I believe in this particular case, Your Honor, the informant does corroborate the dog, and the dog corroborates the informant. The informant had indicated that the drugs would be found in Mr. Okori's room in 256, as well as his vehicle. This particular dog positively indicated to both areas. So I do believe they corroborate each other. I believe that's what the officer was looking to do, was to corroborate the informant's tip. And I know that in the last argument, Mr. Hurley had indicated he would consider that to be bootstrapping, but the state argues that that's actually a totality of the circumstances analysis. We're looking at everything as a whole.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Just to focus on the dog.
Okay.
So in this hypothetical, let's assume there's no informant at all. In the hypothetical, the officer says, I was in a certain motel for completely independent reasons. As I walked down the hall with my drug detection dog, the dog alerted in front of room 12. I'd like a search warrant for room 12. So that's the affidavit. My drug detection dog alerted in front of room 12. Is that enough?
Your Honor, actually, I don't believe that's enough. The cases that I reviewed, at the very least, when they used a drug detection dog, at least had some suspicions ahead of time to utilize the dog, as in this case. But, I mean, even in a postal inspector case, when they get a package and they think that it has drugs and they get a drug detection dog, there's the initial suspicion. And your example was absolutely no suspicion, but just walking a dog.
All right, let's change the hypothetical that was posed by Justice Holland. Let's assume that there is no dog and there is no sniffing. All we have, and no independent corroboration, all the information that the police officer has is that which was told to him by the confidential informant. And so the affidavit says, here is what I was told by the confidential informant, past proven, reliable. You know, there's drug dealing, you know, such and such is a drug dealer. He's in motel room 12 at XYZ motel, you know, it's I'm told that they're dealing drugs. Does it pass or fail?
That is a tough question, Your Honor. It's definitely a closer call, and I would say that without cooperation.
Why is it a closer call?
Why is it a closer call? Because there is no cooperation, Your Honor. And if you look at Illinois versus Gates, it says the things that need to be considered include the specificity of the tip, but corroboration lends credence to the tip, and corroboration is helpful to that tip. And that's why I'm saying it's a closer call. I think in this particular case, I would have liked to have had more information maybe from the confidential informant.
Well, I know you would have. We all would like to have more. The question
Well, I'm just saying for me to be comfortable in saying that it passes. I think it's, I know that under Illinois
well,
versus.
It passes or it doesn't.
Correct.
So you're saying
But everybody has an opinion, Your Honor.
Your opinion is that it doesn't. Your position is that it doesn't.
I would say no.
No what?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Well, isn't one of the issues in this case raised by the fact that what we got from the confidential informant really wasn't predictive? When we talk about corroboration, historically, we have something from the confidential informant about events that have not yet transpired, and then the more you can confirm that they're unfolding as predicted, the more credibility that gives to the informant. Here, what we have are assertions that aren't predictive, and then the probable cause ultimately turns on the dog. Isn't that correct?
Ultimately, yes, Your Honor.
Well, and that goes back to my hypothetical question. You seem to indicate in response to my hypothetical that a dog alerting in and of itself would not be grounds for probable cause. Now, I don't know that, is that, did I understand your answer correctly?
Yes, Your Honor. Of all the cases I've read, I have not come across one where there was just a drug dog wandering by and alerted on a room, and that started an investigation.
All right, so then let's go back to what we have in this case. Since we know it's not predictive, how is it corroborative, or it really, I probably use Justice Ridgely's question in another format. We seem to have a self-fulfilling prophecy here. The dog in and of itself wouldn't be sufficient, but the dog is sufficient for corroboration of non-predictive behavior.
In this particular case, Your Honor, well, one, although predictive behavior is something to be considered, it isn't the end-all be-all with respect to a case. In most of the cases I've read with respect to predictive behavior, we're already dealing with usually an anonymous informant, and they're trying to bolster up that particular informant by saying, if he gives us things that are predicting things that happen in the future, then we can give some credence to what he says. But from this, in this particular case, we're starting from the point that we already have a past-proven confidential informant, someone this officer knows, someone that this officer arranges to meet, so, and it's from the warrant, it looks like at least twice, showing in the picture the first time and then getting the information the second time from the predetermined location. And then we have the drug dog that corroborates the information. I'm suggesting in this case, Your Honor, the predictive behavior is not needed because we have more with respect to the confidential informant. And then we also have the dog. It's not an end-all, be-all.
So, in essence, we're back to where you started, which I think is entirely appropriate, which is Illinois v. Gates. if we look at, if we parse the components of this affidavit, standing alone, any one of them would probably have been insufficient, but collectively, they satisfy the totality of the circumstances test.
That is what I'm arguing, Your Honor. I believe Illinois versus Gates clearly says that. I believe that's why the officer conducted his investigation the way he did and supplied the information of the drug dog in order to make a stronger search warrant.
Is there a true majority rule? In other words, a majority of the federal circuits or a majority of state Supreme Courts that has addressed this CV issue? Does the dog training and certification have to be included in the affidavit or not?
To be honest with the court, from what I could tell, the circuits are divided. I was able to find United States versus Rivera in the Third Circuit. There's a case from the First Circuit, United States versus Groupie, that came out on June 20th that basically says common sense and reasonable reading, credentials of the dog not needed. But I believe that the Sixth Circuit is against that and says that there must be something, the word trained, as opposed to just drug detection. So there's a sliding scale. I don't know of a jurisdiction that says you have to attach credentials or anything of that nature.
Well, what would the best practice be? It seems we have a lot of choices. In this case, one choice would have been to say, what we have is drug detection dog. Mm-hmm. What they could have said is my certified drug detection dog, or certified by something drug detection dog, or we could have said drug detection dog who is proven to be reliable in the past and in so many alerts or something like that, or any variation on that. This drug detection dog, while it's been approved in some jurisdictions, appears to be about as slim, for want of a better term, as a descriptive term as any case has upheld. Is that correct?
I would say that's at the end of the scale, yes, Your Honor.
So what's the best practice?
While I think it's sufficient in this case, and I've seen warrants both ways, I believe to include something saying the dog is certified would be helpful. Although I believe it's common sense to say that if someone is calling up a specific officer, Corporal Vitale from the Wilmington Police Station, and he's bringing his dog, Kai, who's a drug detection dog, while it might be best practice to just put in the buzzword certified or trained and certificate from, I don't think it's needed. I think it's reasonable to assume that this dog is trained to do its job because that is what he wants it to do.
I suppose that if we were trying to come up with a hypothetical perfect affidavit, it would say, as Justice Hogg suggested, number one, that there was corroboration by certified drug detection dog.
Yes, Your Honor.
Secondly, that there was information supplied by a past proven, reliable, confidential informant, and 97.7% of the cases where we've used him. And thirdly, apart from the use of the dog, I corroborated 100% of the information that was supplied by the CI.
That would be a perfect world, Your Honor, but we definitely don't live in a perfect world, and the issue is under Illinois versus Gates and the totality of the circumstances, did this police officer provide enough for the magistrate to have a substantial basis to issue the warrant, and the state submits that he did.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I feel extra stupid now since I relied upon Rivera and then didn't even know that the name of the case. I don't disagree with the Rivera holding. I'm just saying that I don't, although I originally said apparently there has to be a certification per se in order to validate reliability, I don't think the law requires that, just a totality of circumstances analysis.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement. We'll also take a brief recess.